Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. I'm back with another A-League Men review, recap, overview, general thoughts. And this week, I've been lonely the last couple of weeks, so I've decided to get a couple of the FPF boys on with me to kind of recap last round, but then also maybe just get some general thoughts as we head into the final couple rounds of the regular season before finals. So, first of all, joining me today from Victoria, and I don't know what he's doing with his hair, but that is Jake Holub this morning, who clearly has not had a shower this morning yet.
Yeah, look, I had a late one. I was trying my best to stay up to watch that Oli Roos game last night. Didn't go very well because of how boring it was. So, yep. But yeah, I'll fix up my hair later. Thanks, mate. All good.
You just made me on the podcast. You don't do that. You don't do that on this podcast.
I'm getting binned. Sorry.
All right. There's still a line from Antonis. If only there was a player who could have broken the game open for the Oli Roos last night. Anyway, Antonis also joins us, and he's also in Victoria, which is so gross. But Antonis, welcome back to the podcast. You are in Victoria because.
Well, since our national teams don't want our most talented young player, I thought I'd enjoy him in the league while he's still around. So, Western United, Adelaide United tonight, some more of Nestor and Kunda. Check out the new facility down at Tarnate. That's why I'm here.
Did you see Western United advertising the game yesterday?
Yeah, so it's a very interesting league we've got for ourselves, isn't it? Like, you never know. Like, some clubs try to get in the way of your young players. Others are trying to advertise them and everything in between. So, yeah, look, it's interesting, but you know the kid's going to bring in people when it sure beats trying to stand in his way and trying not to make him play football. So I'm all for it.
I hear you've got a great relationship with Richard Peel. who came out yesterday and confirmed that basically he was behind the investigation into whether Nestor was actually called up or not. Anyway, we're not going to talk about that anymore. That's over and that's done. As far as I'm concerned, let's talk about what happened in the A-League last weekend. So as a recap, we had some big storylines. I mean, the last 3 weeks have been, particularly the last 2 weeks, have been just incredibly entertaining, number one. And, like, the narratives are kind of all over the place, too. So, Wellington are still doing this. They just found a way, again, against Victory. MacArthur bounced back without their leader and probably should have been put away after 70 minutes in Adelaide. But they are able to pull it out the bag with 10 men. You've got the Mariners just steamrolling, I think you guys agree, steamrolling to a premiership here. They've got two games here still to go against Adelaide and the Jets, where I would expect them to get 6 from 6. But the Jets, who is the next game here, are rolling at the moment. They're on 2 wins on the bounce. And after a really poor first half, I thought, against Brisbane, they kind of settled and then got it done. The derby, which was just fucking amazing. That was just, that last 3 minutes was just absolutely exhilarating. Probably the most exhilarating moment of 2024 for me so far. And then Melbourne City decided to actually play to their potential and once again scored more than 7 goals or 7 or more. And Perth decided to basically check out and just go, you know what, fuck this, season's over. We'll just concede 8. So basically every result was either surprising or had big ramifications on top six, premiership, something like that. So, yeah, which is awesome when we get to this stage of the season, because even if you don't think, you know, even if you're not one of those guys who watches every A-League game every weekend and maybe only watch your team, like at this stage of the season, I feel like you've got to have your eyes on everything because, yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. Jake, let's start with you. What caught your eye, basically, from the weekend?
Yeah, I think for me, really had to be that City performance. I think before the game, I'm also looking into it actually probably after the first goal, and I'm like, okay, a City team, if they score an early goal, They're either going to win a game 7-0 or they're going to, draw 0-0 and just struggle to create any chances. And it was just one of those games where once it just gets clicking for City early on, they find that confidence, they find a way to break through a team. They just steamroll the team ultimately. And Perth, to be fair, obviously they don't have a lot to play for at this point. They're out of finals contention. And realistically, it's a quite a rotated young team at the moment, but it was quite appalling. A lot of interesting decisions made. Riley Wallen, for example, taken off the 27th minute. It's not often you see a play again taken off that early. So that was a bold call, but 4-0 down. They ultimately had to do that. But yeah, I think it was just a sort of peak Melbourne City form. It shows what they can be and what they can do. But an interesting sort of fact I noted was after their two big performances this season, the 7-0 against McCarthy. No, that was last season. They've had multiple of these ones, but they smashed Brisbane and they smashed Western Sydney.
So what, it was Brisbane 8-1 and
8-1
then
Brisbane
Wanderers
and then
7 nil.
7-0 to the Wanderers.
Yeah.
But what I noted after both of those games was you think, okay, after a big performance like that, you get your shit together, you start pushing for finals. But after those games, they've actually struggled. Like, I think after the Western Sydney game, they won the next game, and then they proceed to draw, lose the next five. And then that was the exact same for the other game. So I think that's the question for them now because two games remaining, they're just 1 point behind Western Sydney, who they ironically have next game as well. It's all down to that. You'd think after a performance like that, what they've shown over Western Sydney in the past with that 7-0 win, they have it. Like they might sort of sneak into the finals, but at the same time, like the City this season have been consistently inconsistent or inconsistent. So I think that's probably what I'm going to be looking out for. That's going to be the key sort of storyline alongside the Central Coast Wellington sort of title race there, which is going to be unbelievable to watch. I'm very, very excited to watch that game between Western Sydney and Melbourne City.
Surely they change. They can't do it now. But that Wanderers City game is at 3 p.m. Well, my time, normal time, on Saturday. So 3:30 Eastern. Surely you should swap like that with the MacArthur Sydney game and put that a night to, I don't know, man. But
It's a bit
that's the
baffling.
biggest game of the round coming up, obviously, because basically it's winner takes the last final spot. So yeah. That's huge. Antonis, what about you? I can't believe Jack didn't talk about the derby. That actually was like insulting. I felt like I just got spat on.
I wanted to
But
leave it to someone else as the
yeah,
Melbourne-based
I'm not
person.
going to touch on the derby either because I know, Christian, you want to talk about that, but I'll go elsewhere. First of all, I'm very excited because, like you said, all over the ladder, everything's still alive. Premiership's still alive, top six is still alive, even Wooden Spoon's still alive. Everything is kind of still relevant. But you talked about how, well, the Mariners look in a good position to finish first. Oh, I'm going to argue that it's not going to be as simple. They should be starting as favourites in both those games, but they're playing tomorrow in the AFC Cup. Tomorrow's the 17th. Then they play on the 21st again. Then they play on the 24th again. Then they play on the 27th again. That is a really heavy schedule for a side that's lost a couple of players to the Olyroos as well. And yes, like you said, they will be starting favourites, but heavy legs do funny things. And obviously, in the game against Adelaide, you're playing against the kid who's got the biggest of chips on his shoulder. And then again, in the last game of the season, derbies are crazy games. You never know what's going to happen. And Newcastle, I don't know, it feels like ever since they've been eliminated from finals, are expressing themselves more. They're playing without that pressure. So again, on paper, there should be favorites, but the saying is, games are not played on paper, so I'm really looking forward to seeing how they actually play out in those last few weeks. Because especially if Wellington can keep pushing, putting that pressure on, we might have a pretty crazy finish, maybe our own Aguero moment. Who knows?
Yeah, and then they're both playing at the same time on the last
Exactly.
game of season two. So yeah, and yeah, obviously, I've spoken the last couple of weeks about the AFC Cup stuff, and like they're going to Kyrgyzstan too. So it's not like, yeah, it's an unfamiliar environment, I guess. And I don't know. I just trust them probably more because Wellington. I don't know, I mean, victory actually could have won that game, to be fair, on Friday. But kind of
I'm
classic
talking about
victory.
this whole year, though.
Yeah,
Now,
classic
maybe
victory,
going
don't take
forward
the
in the year,
chances.
Charles.
Yeah. So, and I don't know, like weirdly, like Newcastle are in decent form. Like, could Newcastle even kind of beat Wellington this week? I don't know. I don't see that, but yeah, it's there's all sorts of things that could happen. And then Wellington have MacArthur to finish, and that's De Vere coming back. Who knows? Maybe MacArthur is still jockeying for like getting a home final with Sydney. I mean, Sydney MacArthur this week is interesting because kind of the winner might get fourth and potentially play the other one at home. That could even be an elimination final preview. So that's interesting too. Look, it's actually disgraceful that neither of you spoke about the derby, so I'm going to speak about it now.
Well, a good place to be there that like we don't automatically start with that because there's so much going on.
It's that was, if you wanted an advertisement for why you should watch the A-League, even when the APL was a disaster and, you know, X, Y, and Z is happening off the pitch and clubs are trying to stop an 18-year-old from playing and whatever, right? You can still get so much joy from that. That was unbelievable. Like, so basically, the Wanderers come out and I actually thought, so weirdly, Sydney controlled the game and they probably deserve to win. But probably if you look at the big chances in the game, really the Wanderers actually kind of had them. So, I mean, Antonsen scores where he absolutely should be scoring. Like, Jesus Christ, you're 4 yards out, man. And maybe that's a different game if Wanderers take the lead. They don't. Then, you know, so weirdly, look, again, Rudin, we've got to address this guy again on this podcast. So a couple of things. We'll get to the Eunice stuff in a moment. But so he actually got asked about Jack Clisby after the game too, as to why Jack Clisby was taken off at halftime. And he just said, not good enough. And that's why he was replaced. And he spoke about kind of something which me and Antonio saw up close here in Adelaide when Joe Lolly came here, which is kind of, you know, fullback, don't let Joe Lolly inside. We know he always wants to go inside when he gets on it. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you know it, but I don't think anyone is well qualified enough to stop it. Like, you know, he's just so good at going inside. But anyway, obviously he was killing Clisby in the first half a little bit. But I love how it was like, take off Clisby, put Tate Russell there. And I think it got worse. Like, I'm pretty sure that got worse. So Tate Russell lets him inside on the first goal. Thomas, it's poor, parries it straight to Gomez, easy tap in. Then we'll get to the winner in a moment. Then the Wanderers come and Marcelo keeps it alive. Aiden Simmons does do, as Daniel McBreen said in the commentary, brilliant job of beating his man and then getting the ball in. Inexplicably, there's three players, three at the back post. And Zach Sapsford, who, like, I don't... This is, like, one of the craziest kind of narratives around this kid who just, like, only scores goals in the derby. And, like, now after this, like, we probably won't see him or something in the last two games. He'll, like, just be in the NPL team. And then, like, next season, we'll see him in, like, round three scoring the derby again. Like, it's just bizarre. But great header. Looks like the Wanderers have stolen a point. I mean, at that stage, I was thinking, wow, great result for the Wanderers. They've got a point. You know, that's huge for them. And then, you know, Sydney go down the other end. Lolly keeps it alive. Caceres makes a nice little run. And Tate Russell, Jack Clisby's replacement, gives... I've actually watched it back. We were talking about this because of the Eunice comments after the game. And we're talking about how maybe it's Aiden Simmons' fault more because he's too far inside, which is true. And I think even Josh Berlante, if you go and have a look, I'm not too sure he's like marking air. But Tate Russell's attempt at blocking the cross was pathetic. If you go and look at that too. I don't know what he's doing, like whether he's worried about, I don't want to deflect it or something, or I'm worried about giving away a corner, but it's like, man, it's the 97th minute, like the last play of the game, throw your body at it. What is this? So I don't understand that. Ball comes to the back post. Kachasi's coming in. And I think it actually made the moment even better that Kachasi's kind of running onto it for about 5 seconds. And you're like, okay, put it in. And then he kind of mishits it into the ground. And then the ball's just like slowly. There's like that, you know, in football when you're watching a goal and like there's like that moment where it kind of stops just before the ball hits the net and everyone's like just waiting. And then it hits the corner and yeah. Just absolute delirium. That was insane. I actually, so when Sapsford scored, Like I kind of like yelled, like I was like, you know, hyped up. And then when Kucharski scored, I did the same thing, but I like jumped in the air and was like, I don't know, like I kind of walked around for a bit. It was like, what's going on? And this is even funnier because in the room next to me, I had a couple of deluded Port Adelaide fans watching AFL, and I was the only one in the room watching the derby, and I was getting like clowned a little bit, and I'm like, yeah, well, fuck you. Like I clearly got more entertainment value. I mean, to be fair, that Port Fremantle game was kind of interesting, but you know, I still
Not in a good way.
not enough sharing ball. Point was, like, the Sydney Derby is just still, despite all the, like, you know, the over-policing in the last derby and stuff, it's still right up there, right? And that, I have to put it out there, any Sydney Wanderers fans, that's got to be, I don't even think there has even been an occasion where we've had two goals in stoppage time in the derby before. That's probably the first time over the top of my head. And that's got to be, like, the most dramatic derby. And what was on the line, too? Like, now, Sydney might have just condemned the Wanderers to, yeah, a spot outside the finals, because I think, I don't know.
Fighting
I still think
for
the
their lives.
one, huh?
They're fighting for their lives now against Melbourne City. You got
And we've, you know, given that Melbourne City smashed them last time, and we've seen Melbourne City, you know, score eight on the weekend. I don't know. Does that make them favourites? Maybe we'll talk about it in a moment. But and now Sydney have secured finals, rightfully so. Like, I think I was talking about this last week, and the fact that MacArthur and Sydney had kind of put themselves in positions after the losses last week, where they were kind of suddenly looking over their shoulder, and I'm kind of like, this is stupid. Like, both of them should be finals teams, you know, over the course of the season. So basically now, I think, does this is a weird question, but do there's any out of the Melbourne City and the Wanderers, does either team deserve it more over the other in terms of, like, do you feel, are they both just, you know, you're as bad as each other this year, and whoever gets it gets it? Or do Melbourne City maybe have more credit in the bank because they've shown what they can do in certain games?
No, it's they're in that spot. I think I talked about the start of the year. They're the pack. They are just the best of the worst, if you must, you know? Like they've had it a bit more together than everyone else. If Adelaide United won against MacArthur, they were in finals if they won the game in hand. So we're talking about a side that was winless for 2 months and they're in that conversation. So I am not giving credit to either one in this discussion, especially because their resources dictate that they should be fighting for the top two, not the top six. So yeah, it's one of them's going to get that position, but regardless, they're going to be extremely disappointed with their season.
I agree with Antonis, but at the same time, I would say that City have struggled to keep a lot of their players fit and healthy playing together. I think that's been the main thing. And having Lecky here have his first start alongside Arsene, alongside McLaren, alongside their wingers, alongside all their quality, I think it just was overpowering. I think it just shows what they can be. But the problem has been they just haven't been able to keep everyone playing and fit at the same time. It's been almost hilarious how, like, Arslan will get suspended, then Lecky's back, then Lecky gets injured, Arslan's back. They've never really been able to put all their key players together at the same time.
You know, but Wellington have had Oscar Zavada out for like 3/4 of the season. I was thinking about this yesterday. Yeah, because I was thinking, yeah, if City did have like everyone fit the whole season, like, is this a, you know, a top three team, for example? But it's like, you know, even Victory had Fornaroli out for a month. So, I mean, Sydney have had the odd player always suspended because of all the red cards, right? And even Wanderers, which is probably the only defensive route at this point, have had, you know, injuries here and there. So yeah, I know it's like there's it's star quality that's been out, I get it. But I mean, you should still be able to find a way, I think, with the squad they've got to kind of, yeah, be more viable. I mean, if you told me before the season that Melbourne City would be two games away from finishing seventh, and basically in round 26 they've got to do or die to make finals, I would have said nah, no chance. So yeah, like, I still think there's been some issues, injuries or not. Okay, circling back because I forgot. So let's, as I called it last week, Marco's moments, because this guy has one every week. So This time it's not as funny though. So last week it was the perception's an interesting thing comment, which I talked about, and I actually said at the end of that, Marco, if you beat Sydney, then you know maybe you can kind of talk more about perception. And guess what? You lost. So thing is, Marcus Yunus comes in, and Rudin reckons, well, he name drops him at full time in the on pitch interview, and then he name drops him in the press conference. And not only that, and then like a couple of minutes later in the press conference, he talks about, you know, it's okay to make mistakes, but you need to learn from them. And he was kind of suggesting that Marcus Yunus is not learning from his mistakes. So just further throwing him under that bus.
And I'd also add the fact that when someone asked about Ninkovic, said, I don't want to talk about individual players here, mate. When a minute ago, you were just spraying an 18-year-old in front of the media. Okay, anyways.
And you know what? Like, he talks about perceptions and interesting things they're following. Yes, it is. And you know what's the funniest thing about perceptions is you actually make those perceptions happen. It's your talk that creates those perceptions. So those two things go hand in hand. They're not completely isolated things, you know? And that's what completely does my head in about this situation, because you talk about his mention about the state of the media as well. Well, when this is how you present yourself to the media, what do you want to invent something that's not there? It's people are hanging off what you're saying. This is the perceptions you present. This is the image you present to the people. So if you want to blame anyone, that's fine. You can blame, but you need to include yourself in that blame.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah, the standard stuff with him. I've been going on about all season, like no accountability. And now, yeah, it's funny because he's spoken about recently in some of his press conferences, oh, like, you know, we've got a lot of young ones, you know, you need to guide them through and stuff. And it's like, okay, yep, that's definitely the way to do that. Like, you know, with Marcus Yunus, I don't understand it. The contradicting of what's being said and what's actually being done. And even like, it's like, so I mentioned Clisby before, how he was like, you know, wasn't good enough. That's why, you know, he knows Lolly can't come inside. And it's like, and he's like, you know, and he knows that. And I'm kind of like, does he know that? Or did you just kind of take him off and drag him because, you know, fuck you because you didn't perform? Like, I don't, you know,
what I find the funniest is that the winner of the derby was Jaden Kucharski, which is a young player from the other side. But not just that, talking about learning from your mistakes. Remember the derby we attended, Christian, at the start of the previous year? And how had all those chances to win the game, couldn't take it. And I think he even mentioned it in the post game that in the first one here, I had a few chances and didn't fall for me. And yeah, you see how actually being managed properly as a young player can actually make you learn from those mistakes, can give you confidence.
Well, Kucharski, the last derby at Allianz, Kucharski missed that big chance. And then obviously Sapson scored at the other end. So
he's had those moments, even in that one that we're talking about. But have you ever seen anyone, be it a Corica, be it a Tale, come out and just berate him, say, you've got to be better there, you've got to be finishing that off? He knows he needs to be finishing that off. He's not an idiot. He knows he had a chance. He had to finish it off.
See,
don't need to slap it down in their face. They're well aware of that.
See, I don't think.
How can you support them through that?
Yeah, but if you listen back to it, so what's interesting about it is he's not like with Yunus. I don't think he berated him. Like it was kind of like
he had him out to dry.
Yeah, no. I don't know, but that's right. Relax. He like as in he didn't he wasn't firm or anything. He was kind of just like you know. He's got to be there, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a game model, et cetera, et cetera.
He was dismissive, which is even worse, to be honest. It's like, I should know that.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm going to get at, which is kind of like, have you made sure he actually knows that? Like, you know what I mean? Because, and no, maybe he doesn't, maybe he should, but, and if he doesn't, it's like, well, don't, because didn't he, I didn't even see it full time. Apparently, like, he kind of had to go at him on the pitch as well. But, it's like, I don't understand why you need to even say it in the press conference. Like, it's like, just say, you know, we didn't pick him up at the back post, we fell asleep, and kind of do a collective sort of comment. Like, and this is the difference between coaches like him and the ones who are top of the league right now. Like, Mark Jackson would never do that. Giancarlo Italiano would never do that. Never. If they actually did that, I would actually be shocked. Like, I think I'd fall off my chair if I heard one of them do that in a press conference, you know?
In a league where things are this tight, this close, those things are big difference makers. Actually having players who are happy, having players who want to play, who are confident, make a huge difference. Again, I'm going to go back to my familiar example of Adelaide, but what's the difference between them at the 2 months ago and them now? After winning three games in a row, they lost the last one. It's confidence. The same squad, they're confident. They picked up a couple of wins. Confidence goes a long way. And when you have someone, not just inside your building, someone leading your building, actually being the chief of shooting them down, it cannot be good for your confidence whatsoever.
No. Jake, any other thoughts on the derby?
Yeah, look, I just think it really reinstates, because now it's interesting to see what will happen with Zach Sapsford. As Redan will do all this talk about, you know, we need to guide our young players, this and that. Sapsford came through with two key moments in, you know, two crucial games. And in the last one, seemingly disappeared, wasn't played. This one here comes through, grabs a great goal after Brello's obviously now picked up an injury. Now it's, do you back him? Do you at least show the ability to back a young player like he's been talking and give him the confidence to keep playing through his form? As Sapsford, not only the NPL has been unbelievable, one of the top players, but now on the first team as well, he's came up with two crucial goals in two crucial games. So now in the fight for a final spot, it's up to what does he do now? Because Borrello's out. You know, some of the other key players, well, Antonsen, you know, doesn't look awfully great this season. Do you back a young player in a key moment like this, or do you sort of keep going back to your old ways and let's see how that sort of pans out for you in that sense? Because
also because Wanderers' NPL team is like absolutely cooking at the moment. They've won seven in a row.
Honestly think that the NPL team would probably fare better right now making a final spot than the first team. I'm not even taking the piss. They look that good. So yeah, I don't know. I personally don't. I think Rudan will just stick to his old sort of ways, play the old veteran players like Ninkovic starting in the derby at this point. I don't know if you guys saw this one point where the ball's played out to the wing. You have 40-year-old Ninkovic trying to go run at it against like a 19-year-old Hayden Matthews. He took a couple steps forward and he's like, I'm not even getting this ball. Like, and you're starting this fossil, let's be honest here. This guy can't run on the wings anymore over, you know, your Unises, your Sapsfords in the first place, etc. So I think it just really shows.
Also, a couple of things. So that was George Clark who was asking Rudan about Ninkovic at full time post game. Like, I don't even think he was like, I think he was just saying, oh, just a word on Milos, like, for his last derby. That's all. Like, and Rudan somehow took that as like,
response.
Oh, why are you making this about Milos? It's like, well, no one's making it about Milos. We're just asking for a comment because it's his last game.
It was the last question as well.
And
like,
the whole
wasn't
thing,
even, like,
you've got to be, you've got to be better than that. It's, you're the coach of a legendary.
Yeah, yeah, no. Who are you to like judge what the media? I know. That's.
But again, this is what I said before. He has come out and said, oh, the media is going to be better. Look at the state that we're in. But you are the coach of a legendary A-League player playing his last derby, playing his last major game. It's your responsibility to go out there and give a sound. Let's be honest. But when you come in with that attitude that it's me against them, I need to go and I need to stand up for myself, it's, you are making situations that are not even there.
Yeah.
That's what's happening right now. And it's painfully obvious. And I'll go back to what Jake was saying as well. Okay, if you think that Marcus is struggling in those spots towards the end to pick up the right player, why don't you start him so he's not in those big spots at the end? Let him have his impact. And when you need some experience, then you can sub on Milos Ninkovic on, where he doesn't need to run after these balls to make an impact at the start, but he gets to help in that defensive effort, help set people up with his experience. But again, that's all about team management, knowing your team, knowing your players. And that's his job.
Yeah. Jake, you mentioned Hayden Matthews there. Thoughts on his performance? Because he was immense again. With Jake Odell-Wright getting sent off like every third week, I think Hayden Matthews might be I don't know, Sydney's most important defender right now. So yeah, word on him.
Oh, his breakout has been excellent this season. Obviously, he came through with some of the injuries seen to Rodwell and Lashota. Came in, cemented his spot really well. But then, obviously, last week we saw him got dropped and brought on half-time, made an unbelievable performance, had a great block off the line, put back in for this game and was immense. Like, this kid is
I think he was rested last week. I spoke about
yeah,
that.
But yeah, potentially, but yeah, and that makes sense. But I think it was more so the fact that he just proved himself, like, no, like, came off the bench, had an unbelievable performance, looked better than all of their defenders, to where it's like, you can't even drop this kid. Like, get him in there straight away. Yeah, he's unbelievable. I think he's just possesses. The thing I was interested with him was, obviously, he's got a big frame. I think he's like 6'5" or something like that. But his speed really impresses me too. He looks very quick. I remember a time where he kept up with Piraeus pretty easily, and Piraeus is probably one of the quickest players in the league. So
Dylan Piraeus was good in this game too.
Yeah. But, well, yeah, I think keeping up Piraeus on a counter attack, like, I think that just sort of shows, okay, this kid's, he not only suits the way that Talay wants to play in that higher line, you know, the ability to get back and recover, but I think on the ball, he looks good, just generally defensively sitting back, making, you know, because he's a big guy, you know, he's able to make those good blocks. Yeah, he is immense, absolutely immense. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he can sort of step up for Sydney. Because maybe, who knows, maybe they challenge for the championship, because this team is bloody good.
Yeah, well, I'm going to finish with my power rankings later. But he did an interview with James Dodd on the A-League's website, and there was a line in there about European interest already in Hayden Matthews. So
it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah,
at all.
There you go. Hey, Sydney, look what happens when you give your players opportunities.
That's the thing,
wow.
Though. Credit to them as well, though, because they've played two and at times together two teenagers basically at the back, and Gurgled Wright and Matthews.
Oh, I mean, that's been their best partnership all season.
But that's what I'm saying. When in Sydney FC history would that even be a reality? So clubs are starting to pick this up. Clubs are starting to figure it out. And due to, again, I'm going to go back to the World Cup, we are in the shop window. People, maybe the general perception of the fan is, oh, Australia, whatever. But clubs are starting to look in Australia because they're figuring out they've got something there. So clubs that do take that approach will be rewarded for it if they do it well.
Yeah. Okay. Let's look elsewhere. So I mentioned some of the results at the start. So, Antonis, yeah, let's go to Friday. So we had all this stuff around Nesta and Kunda, which we're not going to talk about. But then he comes out and scores like just a fucking ridiculous goal. Usual shit, really.
That's good.
That goal was just like insane. Like there was no, like he actually has no right to do that. That was just insane. You know, you're kind of driving, you're just outside the box. He's actually, do you know this funny thing about him? He scored a similar goal against Perth.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Like
same end as well.
I think it was towards the end of the 21-22 season.
That's
maybe.
Yeah.
Same end. And he's got this unbelievable ability. Like, he'll take a touch away from goal. Like, when you're younger and when you're told, like, you know, as a junior player, when you're in on goal, like, you have to actually take your touches towards goal, right? You know, but Nesta's got this unbelievable ability where he'll take a touch away from goal and then he'll still be able to, like, smash it back in the other way, the other side of the goalkeeper. Like, it's just insane. And so he comes out, you know, silences everyone after all the noise. And then, and Adelaide really, I mean, Jesus Christ. Like,
if you talk about their failures, let's talk a bit about that. Because, again, I think we're going too easily past it. Because, again, this is something that should be everywhere. That's not a normal finish.
No.
This guy has normalized the abnormal. You know, this is like his usual goal. And when he takes that touch away, it's like he's kind of loading up that right foot.
Yeah, but he doesn't, like, his back lift isn't that big. Like, he kind of just off one step smashes it. It's like, what the fuck?
I was speaking about that with my mate who I was sitting with the game. This is, you take that shot, I went to the field. For example, you take that shot on FIFA, the game has automatically programmed keepers to save that because that's not normal to score. Like, that stuff should not be going in. So that was next level. And especially for a guy who's had that shit show going on around him, which is none of his making, for him to come out with the mindset that I'm going to do this, it's not normal. 18-year-olds do not respond in that way, which tells you just how much he's grown. And you wrote about that, Christian, as well. Not just on the field, but mentally in that position. Really, really impressive.
Yeah, and then we are going to talk about the other part of it, which is Adelaide not putting this game to bed. Weirdly, though, Antonis, I feel like this defeat, like, if Adelaide had lost like this all season,
yeah,
you'd, Yeah, but like you kind of go, like, what the hell? They just can't finish. Like, and I know, like, there was still the defensive stuff, which for me, like I said all season, it's never going to change with these guys. Like, they can't keep clean sheets. They can't defend. Doesn't matter who, what combination you put. Like, honestly, it doesn't matter. Like, he tried Javi Lopez at center back, and still, they fell asleep when it mattered, right? And yeah.
And United losing like that has been Carl Wirtz good at Leeds United losses. In Carl Wirtz's time, it's you create a lot, you can't finish it, and you lose because you haven't punished the other team.
If you're going to lose, you want to lose like that. Like, not the manner of maybe conceding twice in 10 minutes, I get it, but kind of you can look back and say, really, we should have had that game done by the 70th minute.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, okay, the previous 2 months, those winless 2 months, you'd be watching and you think, Adelaide's not creating anything, where the goal's going to come from, of course you're going to lose. This was more a loss in the manner of the previous 3 years when Adelaide has been at top four or three. They've been fourth, fifth in the league. They've made semifinals. That you're like, they're creating. They just can't finish it. And obviously the defense has not changed in the last 3 years and you're going to be punished by it eventually. So in a weird way, I'm seeing, all right, they're still on here, not on for finals, but at least they're looking like a functioning A-League football side. I guess that's the standard I'm holding them to after those 2 months. But yeah, it's, what do you do? It's, they should have finished it off. They didn't. But again, like you said, Christian, MacArthur's a finals team. And really, if they didn't play finals, you'd be like, really? They didn't play finals?
Yeah.
So again, it's probably justice on the picture of the season. And again, Adelaide's a bit has been too flawed this year to be able to sneak into this final series.
Yeah.
So again, on balance of the season, it probably makes sense.
And Jack, the other moment in this game, so everyone's Irinkunda, don't get me wrong, was probably the best goal of the game, but Velejamant's layoff for Ariane Piol for the equalizer. And it's kind of nice if you're MacArthur when Ulysses De Villa is out, but it's like, hey, we've still got Velejamant, we've still got at least some star quality here. And I'll get Antonis to get a word on Ariath in a moment. But yeah, Velejamant. And then Danny De Silva actually setting up the last goal too, coming out of cryo sleep to get back in the team recently and then off the bench and then set up the goal. MacArthur, you could feel, like, obviously it was a big win because it's huge finals, but like you could tell just the way the club kind of acted with their statement around De Villa suspension and then like the way they celebrated coming from behind, going down to 10 as well. Like they were worried going into this game. I could definitely get that feeling. And then this kind of was just that release of emotion a little bit. So yeah, good win for them.
No, rightfully so. Like, you know, going down to 10 men, you know, 1-0 down, conceding that late penalty, it seemed like everything was like going against them almost. Like, it just wasn't meant to be their day. They were going to, you know, drop the points and potentially be out of contention and, you know, lose a final spot. Who knows? But they found a way. They found a way. You know, maybe a little bit lucky in a sense. Well, to be fair, you know, like the penalty wasn't great. Let's be real. You know, Philip Curto didn't really have to make a great save or anything like that. But yeah, I think it was a nervy moments for them, you know, like unbelievable scenes, really. Just, I think looking here, yeah, four shots on target all game. They're, Adelaide absolutely dominated them, but they just converted when it mattered, you know, like that, like you said, that German chest, that's just pure quality. That's just experience, class. Like, you just love to see that stuff in the league, and a great volley from Piol. And then Tommy Smith coming up with a massive header. Where, yeah, just some napping at the back, just some usual Adelaide United defensive
Tommy
happenings.
Smith, just so random. Anyway,
he was just completely open, like the 6'3" massive guy.
I know. It's like you're just gonna leave the 6'3" centre back completely unmarked, 3 yards from goal at the back post. Okay, no worries.
So he converted, and then bang, all done. But even then, like, you know, the penalty given away, like, which I personally didn't think it was a penalty. I thought that was a very harsh call, but yeah. Nesta couldn't convert. I guess it was probably, I think I saw a really good tweet about it where it was like, it wasn't necessarily a fairy tale, but it was like a good representation of him as well. He's got a lot of ability during the whole game. He absolutely dominated, scored a screamer, but still has his like sort of small parts in his.
Sounds like something Antonis would have tweeted. Are you sure?
Was that Antonis? Was that Antonis?
I think it was in my article as well.
I think it was Vince Regari, I think it was.
Yeah,
I
okay.
think like anyone that's followed that journey,
Regari was there. He got front row seats to the goal.
I think anyone that's followed Nesta's journey though probably says, yeah, this is kind of fitting, isn't it? We get a bit of everything. I asked Carl about the game and he thought it was pretty appropriate too.
And Antonis Ariafpiol with the equaliser. Gets an opportunity because obviously Jake Holman's away. They've also got obviously Bernardo injured. So yeah, there was kind of an opportunity there for him to get some minutes and he took his opportunity.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the penalty in a second as well. But yeah, it's fantastic to see him. And again, really fitting because he's a kid that's come through the Metro Stars, but wasn't in the system in that NTC pipeline to go through to LA United. Didn't pick him up, so he had to go interstate for an opportunity. Wanderers didn't really look out for him, so it's great to see him making the best of his time at MacArthur. And again, you talk about his injuries, but you have to take the chance when it comes, and he well and truly took it. And it's not just the goal. He had that Adelaide United backline stressing when he came on with his size. With his
I might be able to have the Adelaide United backline stressing.
But again, the minute he walked on, I'm like, oh my God, he's grown since I last saw him. Mm. He was already a pretty big athletic boy at Metro Stars. He looks even bigger now. And honestly, it seems like kind of like a Cassini Yang. He knows how to use that to his advantage really well. And he had like United backline working overtime and he really shook them up. And fantastic for him. Great moment, getting that first goal, professional goal at home, a moment he'll never forget. And hopefully he's made his stake to move on as a permanent member of that squad. Obviously not starting 11, but definitely has an impact to begin with. And do you want me to talk about the penalty now?
Well, yeah, might as well.
All right. So this is the second time this has happened this year. We had the whole situation with Stefan Mork taking a penalty a few weeks ago at Hindmarsh and having it saved. Once again, it goes back to having penalty takers assigned. And Carl Witt said after the game, Zach Clough is our penalty taker. After that, it's up to the playing group. When it's up to the playing group, these things can happen. You're the coach. It's your responsibility. Figure it out. In that game, there was Nesta wanted it, Luka Jovanovic wanted it, which Jovanovic, for me, should have absolutely been a penalty taker then, because remember that...
That was Nesta going, like, I'm writing the headlines, yeah, two goals for me, yeah.
That's fine, but again, he's 18.
Yeah.
Like, of course it's going to be like that. You need someone to say, no, this is our system, this is our process. Because Luka Jovanovic, if you remember, Alex Paulsen dived really well to make a spectacular save against him. But look at Jovanovic put that in the absolute bottom corner in Wellington. But as a coach, you need to have your process. And I don't know if the camera showed it, but from my angle, Jovanovic and Nesta were having a conversation. And then Ryan Kitta ran in and basically said, this is Nesta's. So I don't know if this was Kitta making the decision. I don't know if this was a direction from the bench, give it to Nesta. But when you don't have a pecking order saying Clough, Moore, Jovanovic, Aaron Kunda, or whatever your order is, that's what happens. And when it's burnt you twice in a year, and I can argue you've dropped 6 points because of it, when it looks you're going to miss out on finals by maybe a couple of points, well, then it's a conversation that needs to be had. Because no, you don't have Craig Goodwin anymore, that you know any set piece he's going to take, and anyone that tries to take it off him is a pariah in South Australia. That's not the situation anymore. You've got a lot more people that may want it. You need to figure out who's going to have it, because you don't have that all out and out star to take it. Drop 6 points out of it, you need to figure it out.
Yeah. All right. A few other things. Before a few other players I want to talk about before I finish the power rankings. So I thought Finn Sermon scored the winner for Wellington, but now it's
get stuff. It's
fun. Yeah, it says that's Miranda's own goal, but that's no. Yeah, get stuff. Finn Sermon with the winner. Jake, just a word on his season, because I mean he's been a revelation defensively for Wellington this season. Him and Scott Wooden have been unbelievable in front of Paulsen too, and then he gets a reward. And some nice Friday night limbs down at the Caketon as well.
Yeah, he's been start every single game this season. I played every single minute as well, which is unbelievable for a 20-year-old. Yeah, he's had his faith put into him, which I think Italiano has done unbelievably well. I think some of the New Zealand commentators were talking about the fact that Italiano was able to back the young players right from the start, saying you guys are going to be the key play. They've played the whole season, they've got experience, and they're able to get into these games now, these tight games where they're able to just find a way, these young players, which is something maybe you don't see from other teams and other young players. So I think it's credit to the coaching staff for him,
Any
but
specific
also
clubs you're
credit to
talking
everything.
about, Jake?
Was it?
Any specific clubs you're talking about? Maybe some based in Western
No comment, no comment, no comment.
City.
We'll let the results do the talking for themselves there, but I think credit to Fitzsimmons. He's excellent. And it's honestly unbelievable that, he didn't really play last season at all. He was just kind of dropped, kind of inexplicably by Talley, which was really interesting to think about now. I guess sort of maybe Talley sort of learned from that. And the reason has been Hayden Matthews, which I think are very comparable players, Hayden Matthews and Fitzsimmons. But yeah, credit to Fitzsimmons. He's probably already going to be pushing into the All Whites as well. So yeah, I think he's one that maybe moves on to overseas next season. I don't know exactly where, but I think he's one of the top centre backs in the league this season as a 20-year-old. So yeah, shout out to him.
Yeah. And we're gonna stay with you, Jay, because in the Mariners, you were there, beat Western 2-0. Ballard and Theo Harris, the goal scorers. Western United did not have a shot on target in this game. I've just actually seen. Which is kind of insane. This was like the Mariners going, listen, we're coming in here, we don't really give a shit about your new facility. We're gonna beat you, we're gonna win, we're better. And then so Ballard scores again, and I mean we already did the pod last week or a couple of weeks ago
Recently,
where we just did like fucking like 8 minutes of just Max
Max
Ballard
Ballard.
praise, and then Theo Harris with just an unbelievable goal.
Beauty.
Just showing why, the Christian Theo Harris experience can still be very fun if you catch on the
It's a
right
former
day.
side as well. They're just letting him walk to the Mariners, shall I say.
What's with Western United and wingers? Like they just, I don't want to talk about the Milanovic thing again. But anyway, Jake, just a word on Ballard and Theo Harris because, they were great on Saturday.
Well, I think it was an interesting game as sort of post game they were talking about. Like, yes, Western United didn't have a shot on target, which is pretty unbelievable. But that XG wise actually did better. So it was a game where early on it was pretty tight. Maybe you could argue Western United was slightly better, but it was just ultimately just Central Coast. They're just more experienced at this point now, which is pretty unbelievable for such a young team. But they're just able to find ways. And that's the thing with these good teams. And Aloisi specifically talked about that, where they're just able to find ways. This Western United team has struggled all season to just grab points when maybe they deserved it. So firstly, Ballard, I sort of brought it up to Mark Jackson in the presser, where it's like he hasn't scored a goal in his whole A-League career. And then the past three games, he scored two goals. Like, what's going on here? Because the same thing has happened with Josh Nisbet now. And I think it's just, the
Did you
backroom
see
staff backing them.
the goal for Ballard? Did you notice that Nisbet actually never looked at Ballard when he played that pass? He knew
It's just
exactly where he was.
that they have, it's so clear to see the connection they have. It's like, it's just so symbiotic at this point where they're just biological twins almost. Like, they just know what's going on between each other. They're such a perfect mix. I honestly hope that, let's say, the Portimans, rumors are true for Ballard. I hope they sign Nisbet too and just play them together, because I think they'd reap the benefits of that. And I think
Interesting.
Nisbet's also ready for that. So I think that's just class showing through there. And Theo Harris, he's just a player there where, he can just have a moment like that. But I think this season, maybe it'll been not ideal for him, maybe not being as consistent as he could have been. I think he's been in and out of the team, but I think that just shows sort of what he can do if he's backed, start every week in, week out, and wins that spot. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Maybe next season can be for him.
How was Harry Steele used in this game? He was
Left
used.
back. Yeah. Yeah,
Now,
I
left
asked
back in
about
a
that.
four, are you sure it wasn't as a wing back in?
No. Well, if anything, he was played as a left centre back at times early on as well, which is
Okay.
really interesting. So yeah, I brought that up to Jackson as well. So I thought that was interesting because I was thinking, okay, Farrell's out now. Is he the option? And it seems like, yeah, Steele's going to be backed as sort of the left back for the rest of the season, obviously until
That's good
Farrell comes
management.
back.
Like they've clear. I think I saw him have some comments about it after the game where he kind of said we worked with him in training in this role, probably. Because they've gone, well, we need a left footer in this role, and he's not probably going to get near the midfield at the moment with Tapp and Ballard. So we can kill two birds with one stone. We know Farrell's going to go for the Oli Roos. So there you go. Like, again, that's just understanding your squad, which we know that the Mariners do better than probably anyone. So, yeah. All right. And Jing Rhee started this game too. Obviously, yeah. Qual's away. I'd imagine, well, I don't know. Like, they've got probably because Edmondson's going to start in the AFC Cup. And then maybe Jing Rhee starts again next weekend. Like, you know, it's going to be interesting how he manages that situation because now he's got one less striker to choose from. But I think Jing Rhee has showed in the appearances that he's had this season that he's more than capable as well. So yeah. Do you think they, how are they going to go in the AFC Cup? Do you think they will have any issues in these two legs? Because I think everyone expects them to get it done.
Yeah, obviously. Like, I believe the Mariners, the first ever Australian team, apart from the Socceroos, to play in Kyrgyzstan, which is a thing in itself. You know, it's just such an unknown place. Like, I don't think anyone's ever played there before. So I guess you don't know. I think they had to travel. I think early morning, the following morning after the game as well. I ultimately just don't know how the team will go on this factor. But look, I think consistency-wise, they've shown great ability. So I think it's a thing where go to Kyrgyzstan, maybe at the very least try to come away with a draw, just a solid result back at, Gosford and hopefully just smash him off the park and then secure a spot in the finals. That's sort of the ideal scenario for them, especially the fact that the amount of games they've got. I think it's just ultimately just getting through what will be a really tough game for the next one. But I think they've handled themselves really well, like getting through that Western United game, which in itself is a little bit of a grind. So yeah, that's just a great team.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because then, but you could also say, like, maybe go to Kyrgyzstan and try and, like, it's tough, but try and get it done in the first leg if you can. If they're good enough.
Obviously, it's easier said than done. Mm. You know, like with all that travel they've had to do, I don't know. Like, honestly, I think they'd take a draw, but, you know, the Mariners team, to be fair, has shown the ability to go, you know, to another country and just dominate you, which is unbelievable. I think they did that in the last against Kerala, where they wiped them off the park.
Adisha.
Yeah, Adisha, sorry. Adisha.
No, that was like that crap game. It was like nil all.
Yeah.
And the most entertaining thing out of that game was...
a single shot the whole game.
Yeah. The most entertaining thing out of that game was Jackson and the Adisha coach getting into it at halftime. Anyway. All right. A couple other things. So Clayton Taylor scored again for Newcastle 2 weeks in a row. And this was after he had that game against Melbourne City where I did not like his kind of demeanor during the game, and I thought he was kind of like he was checking out in the season, and then he kind of bounced back the next couple of weeks with goals. Stamatopoulos scored again. Brisbane, yeah, kind of bottled this game a little bit. I mean, yeah, they had plenty of chances, and Newcastle in the second half took control. But yeah, Jake, Clayton Taylor finishing the season very strongly.
Yeah, what a young player. I think it was clear to see, especially the game last week against Sydney, he was unbelievable. Goal and assist, just ran the park. And again today, the other day, it was a funny goal. It was just he sort of just dribbled, then sort of found just a small pocket of space. He almost like passed the ball into the bottom corner. It was such a strange finish.
Well,
just found
it was weird because it looked to me like Macklin Freak wasn't expecting the ball. He was like, wait, what? He just put that bottom corner from there. Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's something we expect more from just slow. Well, I've seen that, like, very smart plays, smart finishes here and there, just the ones that disguise the goalkeeper, which I think will always just go very underrated because they may not be the prettiest goals, but they're so hard as a goalkeeper. If, you know, the shot just does no backlift. You just pass the ball in the back of the net. You just didn't expect it. So it was great from him. I also want to give a shout out to Ryan Scott, who's had some unbelievable performance.
Ryan Scott is the most informed keeper in the league right now.
Easily. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been unbelievable. It's a shame that Newcastle is sort of out the run because he's been winning points for them on his own. Like, and you'll see after every save he'll make, or, you know, after the game, he'll get hyped as well, which I just love.
Or do this ridiculous dancing. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I just love it. It's like, you know, we don't see that enough for goalkeepers. They don't get celebrated enough, but for me, yeah, he's been winning points for them on his own. So shout out to him. He's given the chance to start the season, done well. And Stamatopoulos, I think, equaling the most goals in a season record with Taggart, I think it was. So it'll be interesting to see if he can.
Yeah, for Newcastle. Yeah, as a Newcastle Jet. That's right.
Newcastle.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That would have been 13-14 Taggart, which was like early Taggart kind of, yeah. He was pretty good then.
I'm really interested with the Jets because the final two games, they're playing Wellington and Central Coast, the two top teams. So they've got a great chance here to just spoil one of the teams this season.
Crash the party. Oh, yeah. Big time. Antonis, actually, it's for both of you, really. So Melbourne City, just on that 8-0. So McLaren started, and in the end, it really worked out because I think it was kind of like, let's give him a game where it's kind of, he's kind of almost a guarantee to score, and he can really get his confidence back. And I mean, Jesus Christ, like, there you go. That was pretty easy in the end. And so I don't know now. Caputo was, I mean, even Vidmar said after the game, like, it's not like Caputo was dropped because of bad performance or anything. He's been fantastic. They just thought, we had McLaren out team for a few weeks and we're going to bring him back in. Then McLaren had these weird comments after the game on the pitch, which Jack picked up on, where he basically seems to suggest that Caputo is going to be the starting striker next season. Yeah, I don't, I've been saying it for weeks. I'd be shocked if he's there next season. But then Caden came on here, was speaking about Melbourne City next season, and it was kind of like, yeah, maybe they could just come to an agreement in the end and kind of he stays on. Maybe there's not the most interest elsewhere, unless maybe someone like Auckland is ready to pay him like marquee wages. Yeah, I'm not sure. But now going into the Wanderers game, which is their grand final, I mean, this is going to be a massive selection call, which kind of dominates the, like, you'd think maybe that's also why he brought McLaren back in this week, because he thought, well, I've got to get him back in goal scoring form for the next game, because as Vidmar described it, it's going to be a ding dong battle, is what he called it, this Wanderers game. So maybe he thought about it like that, and now McLaren's got a goal and he's got a bit of rhythm, which is the word he used too, for the game against Wanderers. But I mean, in saying that, like, Caputo, like, the big game they had recently was the Mariners away. Caputo was fantastic in that game. Like, that's an interesting selection call. So, Antonis, I'll start with you. What do you reckon about this McLaren thing?
I do think he should be there next year, in my opinion, if you had to ask me right now. I do think, though, he's wrong about Caputo starting next year, because can you imagine Melbourne City going without signing an international striker if McLaren goes? So a bit to play out there, as much as I hope that I'm wrong. But I do think, though, they'll start him in our next game against Wanderers, because, like you said, he's got, well, historically, he is the goal scorer. They brought him in. He ticked the box. He got the goal in the 8-0. So I reckon they'll go with him, because, again, as much as they might rate Caputo, in their mind, still, if we can get Jamie McLaren, or maybe we've still got something this season, because we know how devastating he can be when he's in his best form. So I reckon McLaren starts against Wanderers. I don't know how he'll go, but I definitely he'll start.
Jake?
It makes sense for them bring him into that game where they're expecting to dominate, get his form up, get his confidence up into the two games. But I'd argue Caputo would suit that Western Sydney game better. A game where going away from home, maybe they're not expected to dominate the ball as much. You have a Caputo that's very good at pressing, opening up defense with his pace, his speed. Because I remember the game earlier in the season, Unite Round it was, where Jamie McLaren started that one, barely got a touch the whole
Oh,
game.
that's the game where the Wanderers grind out a 1-0 win, yeah.
That was the grinding out game, and it was true. But McLaren barely got a touch all game, kind of got marshaled in that game. I just feel like that happens a lot in those tough games away from home where they just don't have as much of the ball. He just kind of loses his spot. But I feel like in a game like that Perth, which was perfect for him, where they dominate the ball, he's just poaching in the box. He'll come up with a chance or two because it's naturally going to happen, and he'll come up with it. I'd argue Caputo would be better suited for the Western Sydney game, and then you bring McLaren back in for the Western United game at home. But that's just me. I don't know necessarily
Yeah, so
thought that
that's what
would
you
be.
think should happen.
That's what I think should
But
happen.
do you think
But
McLaren starts this week?
I actually don't know. I actually don't know. I feel like Vidmar sort of picked that up with him, where it's like, for those big games, because he started Caputo on all the big games, and he's brought sort of McLaren in for the maybe the easier games. I don't know, where they'll dominate more. But I don't know. It's a very ballsy call to back an 18-year-old over, the top A-League's goal scorer of all time in a must-win game against a massive team. But I don't know. We'll see. I hope Caputo starts personally. But yeah.
Also, so obviously Arsenal, Patrick,
Young.
just walking this league, really, to be honest. And
Absolute
then
young.
also Natel scored twice. I'm not going to praise him yet. He can actually maybe perform in the biggest game of the season, and then maybe we can talk about him. Yeah, Antonis.
I don't know if you saw in the post game, apparently, was it Andy Harper that said that Arsenal's not signed up for next year?
Yeah, but
I'm
didn't
not
he?
sure.
I don't know,
Yeah.
but then wasn't like one of his celebrations or something? I saw someone say like someone was like looking into it, like, oh, it kind of proves that he's going to stay or something, or
Well,
like
no, but
also.
there should be, if he's not, there should be another 11 teams that are asking the question,
Yeah.
definitely. So,
Yeah.
very interesting.
If
I'm
any
pretty
of
sure
the
his
other 11
contract's
teams
on
can actually
connection.
afford it.
I reread the thing after hearing that. It said they signed for 2 years, but it might be another thing like Torres, where
Yeah.
it's 1 year and then a
Player
player option
option.
in the
Yeah.
next one. So we'll have to
Interesting.
see. Yeah.
Player option. It's like remind me of NBA contracts. And yeah, and then the other thing, Jake, was Yugankovic, a right back, which I actually really liked.
Yeah, he played well.
Because they're going to invert the fullbacks anyway. Well, usually if they're going to play Yugankovic there, so he's going to be as a midfielder in possession regardless. And it kind of lets you play Lecky, Yakalis, Natel, Arslan, McLaren, all these guys in one team. Like maybe that was just for this specific opponent. I don't know if he does that against the Wanderers. I mean, it'd be, I'd love him to do it again against the Wanderers and just kind of like, let's just really dominate the game because I think they can. So yeah, what did you think of that?
Yeah, I thought he looked excellent, and I think it's a good short-term option to make because Nuno Reis is not a right back. Let's just make that clear.
No, I think we found that out in the
And
grand final last year.
yeah, I think we've all found that out. And fair play to Vidmar. I don't think he's played the MPN there once this season. But I think it's a good short-term fix because obviously Talbot's away with the Oli Roos and Galloway's out. I think for the rest of the season
Yeah,
or
if
at least
Caden
until
was here, he would
March.
argue that, you know, that's beneficial for Melbourne City.
Fair enough, but no, but I think it's a good decision made because yeah, I thought yeah, it just allows the rest of the team to sort of play all together because yeah, we've seen Lecky sort of have to come off the bench at times. So it was a good tweak. He played very well.
Yeah. All right. We'll be recording for about now. I'm gonna finish with my power ranking. So yeah, you boys, I don't know if you boys have been listening to the last couple of weeks' pods, putting you on the spot now.
I heard. No, well, obviously I was in the last one where you talked to your power rankings. So I think I was in the last one.
Oh
So.
yeah, no, I talked about them with you after, but yeah. So I've been doing these on the review pod. So my power rankings, let's go. So I've got how many groups this week? There's seven groups. There's seven groups. Two of them are one team groups because they kind of need their own group. It's hard. Like they don't all fit into like these specific labels. But okay. So let's start with the contenders group, which has kind of been consistent for quite a few weeks now. So number one, the Mariners. Number two, the Knicks, and number three, Sydney. And they're the contenders for me. I think both of you are shaking heads, kind of in agreement there. Feel free to jump in, anything you want to dispute here. Number four in their own group, which is the same as last week, the if they're at their best group, and that's Victory. Number five, who I had in that group with Victory a couple weeks ago, but they've been so kind of erratic lately that I've kind of put them in their own group at five. That's MacArthur. And I honestly, that's the I don't know group. I don't really know what to kind of describe them as in terms of where they're at.
Yeah.
How would you label them? I don't know. It's hard.
I'd say they're closest probably to that Victory group where it's like if they're at their best, because I
Yeah.
think, yeah, the quality they have, like we talked about before, Germain, De Vea, et cetera, they're great, but yeah, maybe they don't have just enough quality. I think defensively, they're just too shaky.
Yeah, I still put them at their best. They've just completely lost that four. Even they might have won against Adelaide, but that still wasn't, an imposing
No.
win.
A poor
So
performance, yeah.
what worries me about them is I feel like they can get actually like if Sydney play them in a 4-5 elimination final, I feel Sydney can dominate them in a game.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but that's the thing though. Like at their best, they weren't dominating teams. They just hit you hard
Yeah.
on the counter. So if they can refine, I guess, that defensive steel, maybe, but they're just conceding a bit too much recently to be, because once they start conceding, they're done. So if they can find that, refine that defensive like steel, and then it will play into their hands because yes, maybe a Sydney will dominate, but if they can catch you on the counter and Germain or Davia have a good moment or Rafa has a good moment, then it's game over. But yeah, at the moment, me personally, I'd have them just in that group, but yeah, hanging on by a thread.
All right, and then I've got the now or never group, just six and seven. So six Melbourne City, seven the Wanderers. The kind of it's pretty self-explanatory that. Then the 8-9 group, Adelaide 8, Brisbane 9, which is, I mean, because there's still very, very outside chances of finishing 6. They're not going to. But for me, it's that even if they make the finals, doesn't matter group, which I had this group a couple weeks ago too. And then the 10-11, Jets have now moved up to 10 off the back of a couple wins. Western down to 11th. And they're still in the lay the foundations for next season group. Although, as I mentioned, Newcastle's with the asterisks of, you know, if they actually have, you know, owners. And then 12 in a group by themselves, Perth Glory, who are now officially in the Who Cares group for 2023.
I thought that was the Ross Telegra. Do I still have a receipt for this group?
Yeah, yeah, potentially. Jesus Christ. Did you see? There was that report, I think Ben Smith wrote in the West Australian, where it was like...
Not surprising.
But internally and externally, like a lot of people want big changes. But obviously, yeah, like it's not going to happen overnight. But it's just kind of like, okay, so does Stadgers just say to Ben Smith, hey, listen, I want so much change in this squad. These guys are pissing me off so much. Can you just write a report?
Yeah, but you look,
I don't know.
And I don't know if you saw in that article, it said that it's not going to be sweeping changes because the club is not in a position financially to be able to do that. And I think that's what people need to understand with the Pellegrini situation. Yes, it's fantastic that Perth has an owner, but he's not this gazillionaire that's going to come in and chuck money at everything.
Trust me, you don't want a new owner who's got way too much money and comes in and just spends it like crazy.
Yeah, you'd know.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying like he's not like going to be the guy that's going to transform your club. And again, you're not going to be a Sydney FC or Melbourne Victory or a Wanderers chucking money at things. You're more closely going to be like an Adelaide United kind of thing, that you're going to try to compete with a more modest budget. You're going to try and promote your own players. So it's going to be a process, but not the coach to do it, I think. But you just have to be patient with the process and don't expect miracles. Because he's not, I don't think he's your owner that's going to make you like a high roller in this league. You're going to remain in your reality where you are when it comes to spending, but it's just going to be a bit more sustainable should be the goal.
Well, they've got a few players in that team right now they can build around. So obviously Taggart's the main piece that you build around, obviously. Mm-hmm. Stan Lazaridis recently suggested on ABC Perth that they're probably going to go out and get another striker potentially to partner Taggart. For me, though, Benny has to start next season consistently again. And then Majekadumi. There we go. Got it. He has to start, I think, next season too.
And you need a strong centre back next to him.
Yeah, but you need a strong, experienced centre back next to him. So for me, it's work out who's kind of, okay, who are the young guys and the experienced guys who are definitely starting next season? Like, it's not Gio Colli. It's not Bruce Kamau. It's not Riley Wallen. Like, that's what I mean. So you got to kind of go through it like that. And then surround it with the guys you need to bring in. So, And I also think, like, should Cam Cook just start next season? I'm not saying Ollie Sale's been awful or anything, like, terrible, but I just think, they're in a weird spot with a keeper like that where it's kind of, he's just not really going to be as good as he was at Wellington, right? And you know, like, it's just kind of like, what's that?
International spot?
I think he's got an Australian
passport. Does he have an Australian passport? My thing with him is if Auckland comes and says, like, we want him.
Yeah.
For me, I'd say...
take him, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
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 100%. Yeah.
Interesting. All right.
Not because he's awful or anything, but I do believe like someone like Cam Cole could definitely do a job there.
Mm.
And again, I'll go back to the point that Ollie Sale was a Stadgers signing. That was a deal that was done before he came in. And we saw at the start of the season, there was a bit of loss of form from Sale and Cook started to show what he could do. Sale's taken that position, but yeah, bit to play out there, maybe.
Yeah, we're probably going to do a bit of this in the offseason. We might talk about what clubs need, what they need to maybe get rid of as well. Because there's a bit there with Perth that, has got to go. All right. Boys, anything from you guys to add before we wrap up?
Uh, I want to give a shout out to Mohan Bagan and our Aussie trio who just secured the premiership.
The big
Jason
shout out to all
Cummings,
the Indian followers.
that's it. I made a post of them. They all got around it. I absolutely loved it, and they pulled through. Big win. Jason Cummings with the goal that sealed the victory. Dimi Petratos two assists. Up the Mohan Bagan.
Get in there. Antonis?
Yeah, no, nothing off the top of my head. Maybe, yeah, well done to Lurigo, whose side has further separated the side of themselves, the top of the Polish league. Hopefully, promotion beckons if we can have another Australian player in the European top flight. But yeah, just looking forward to seeing how this season ends up playing out. Because again, it's the first time that I can remember in years that with 2 weeks to go, everything is still alive from top to bottom. Still conversations everywhere. We don't have a team that's completely running away with it, and we don't have a complete basket case either.
But you forgot. You're obviously heading to Tarni tonight to watch the Western Adelaide game. Thoughts, predictions?
Yeah, look, and I said when I booked it, I thought, this is going to be like the most dead game when it comes to any ramifications for the season.
It's
I
not going to be
guess.
dead because Nestor and Kunda's
Exactly. Adelaide is
playing.
alive-ish, but again, you've got Nestor playing, you've got two teams who, again, are trying to get to some goodwill heading into next season. And two teams are trying to figure out who's still going to be around, who's not going to be around next season. And, moments can happen in these games that clarify that a little bit. So looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing Tarnid and what that's all about. Not looking forward to driving there, but no, that should be good.
Yeah. All right. Good luck with the dirt roads. On the way to Tarni.
Half paved roads, actually. So just be just have a half decent car, and you should be all right.
All right. That'll do it for the A-League review. Go and check things out. Latest articles. Antonis did an article on Nestorian Kunda yesterday. And this whole situation with the Oli Roos. You go check it out on frontpagefootball.net. Jake did an article recently on Mizuno, Australia, where he interviewed a bunch of A-League and A-League women players who are wearing Mizuno boots and how they're kind of entering the Australian football market. Go check that out. And our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Threads. Follow us here on Spotify. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And yeah, that's going to do it for this episode. I'm probably not going to be killing myself for three episodes a week with the pods. That is difficult. But we are going to try and maybe get some guests and stuff on heading into the business end of the season. Maybe some players if we can. Who knows? So yeah, stay tuned. Stay tuned for that. And then when the off season rolls around, I think we'll still probably do a weekly pod about the A-League because there'll be all sorts of off season news and then maybe some NPL stuff too on this pod.
Oh,
So
okay.
yeah.
We've got a new team coming in, so there's going to be a lot to talk about.
Definitely.
And
Definitely.
maybe two new teams. Who knows if they can get their you-know-what together.
Yeah, but we haven't heard anything about that for like 3 weeks.
And
So,
we might even have a team going away. So,
well,
for
yeah,
one of the world, but we can.
it's very promising. It's very exciting. Anyway, that'll do it. I've been your host, Christian Marchetti. This has been another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. And until next time, it's bye for now.